Welcome to the Monocle Arts Review with me, Robert Bound. On the show today, we're straddling London and Lisbon as we check out some of the art offerings in each city. Later on in the programme, we'll visit an exhibition that's celebrating its 100th year. But let's kick things off right here in London with who better? Jane Morris from the Art Newspaper. Welcome to the programme, as ever.
Hello.
I say as ever, I mean as sometimes.
Lovely to be here.
You don't come in and talk about review the television, for example,
no.
Do you?
No.
Okay, so we're going to rattle through these today, Jane, I understand. First of all, Anselm Kiefer at the White Cube Gallery in Bermondsey. This is a big, important show.
It really is, I have to say. It's a last chance to see, really, this one.
Yeah.
And I know normally we'd probably go for things that have just opened, but I think if you haven't seen this and you happen to be anywhere near London, you really should make the effort. I don't always say that with all White Cube shows, but this is a really, really impressive show. It's sculpture and painting, and it opens with this enormous lead-lined sort of bunker, like Hitler's bunker, or, you know, it could be a submarine or a terrible dark tunnel, with beds made out of lead. And at the very, very far end, there is a grey picture, very Caspar David Friedrich, of a figure walking away through a sort of blasted landscape. People who don't like Kiefer sometimes say that he can be portentous and heavy and rather melodramatic. And I think there is some sort of sense of that even in this show. But somehow, and I think it's perhaps because of the way the world is at the moment, particularly the sort of wars that are going on and the fact that the world feels so uncertain, that Kiefer's obsessions with war and destruction, I mean, he really...
And bombed cities. He grew up in... Where did he grow up? But in a bombed city,
yeah.
Obviously, in the year the war ended, I think.
He's been obsessed about the war pretty much his entire... The Second World War, pretty much his entire career. And obviously, being German, that has extra layers of... angst, guilt, horror. He's very interested in what do you do if you're German and you've had all these myths and legends, like I mean, Valhalla, which is obviously a Norse legend, but is very powerful in German stories as well. What do you do if you're German when that whole sort of mythology and your philosophy and everything has been, to some extent, co-opted by the Nazis and polluted and ruined? But I think what's great about this, I'm often in two minds about Kiefer's sculpture, but I think the paintings are absolutely fantastic. He is famous for painting these great big landscape paintings, and often with soil and bits of straw and very, very thick paint. These are amazing. They've got lead poured over them. They've got shellac poured over them. They're really, really imposing. They're really big. They're really powerful. I think they're some of the best paintings of his I've ever seen.
So this is, I mean, this, you know, we're down at the Bermondsey branch of White Cube. It's a big building. It's difficult to fill with this sort of, with paintings and feel like those rooms are full sometimes. So this almost feels like a museum show, perhaps.
Oh, I think it feels very much like a museum show. And I think that Kiefer is one of the few people that can easily cope with those massive museum-sized White Cube spaces. They've actually taken over so much of the gallery that the entrance to the loos and things are all blocked off by that huge lead-lined bunker. No, I think it's a really, really powerful, really powerful show and very much worth seeing.
OK, well, that is Anselm Kiefer's Valhalla. It's on at the White Cube in Bermondsey until the 12th of February. It's a must-see, says Jane Morris. Next, we're going to go to Michael Andrews. This is called Earth, Air and Water. It's on at the Gagosian Gallery, also in London. Jane, fill us in on Michael Andrews, a not-so-well-known name for maybe some of our listeners overseas.
So Michael Andrews is not, I wouldn't say was massively well known anywhere, in fact, actually, except for people who actively study the history of British painting. He was part of the sort of colony room group, which is, you know, people like Lucian Freud and Francis Bacon.
The good time boys.
Very much so. And he was a bit of a good time boy himself, it has to be said. I mean, I think he did like the drink quite a lot, as they all did. I think that... Probably because they are such titans, those two. They do tend to overshadow everybody else. And Michael Andrews, unlike some of the other of that sort of group of people like Frank Auerbach, also doesn't paint in this big, thick, impasto, expressionist type style, which most of that so-called London group are known for. He retreated off to Norfolk fairly early on and started painting these beautiful, rather washy landscapes.
And I love these. I love his work and these paintings particularly.
He's clearly, I think, trying to reproduce on a big, big scale, because a bit like Kiefer, these are really big scale paintings. He's trying to recreate much of the sense that you get with watercolour. And there are a few of his watercolour sketches, and he's a very, very nice watercolour painter, I have to say. And it looks like he was experimenting a lot to try to achieve that effect. Now, I found that very interesting because I actually tried to do something very similar myself when I was younger, when I was painting a lot. And he's done it very successfully. What he's done is he uses often unprimed or very lightly primed canvases. And he uses acrylic, sometimes oil, gets it very, very thin, and often is using spray, but it must be, some of the time it's wet into wet. So you get these lovely sweeping gradations of colour, very sort of subtle changes in the colours, which are very beautiful.
And these are sort of, these are landscapes. They are naturalistic, but there is something of the abstract in those washes of colour. They're uncanny works a lot of the time.
Very much so. In the same way that I think if you thought about Kiefer, you can see a lot of Turner, I think, in the Kiefer paintings. Here, I think you can see a lot of Mark Rothko, particularly if you start zooming in on areas of the canvas. You can see the spray as well, which again, a lot of people tend to associate with graffiti artists, but because he's, as I say, sprayed onto wet, the effect is much, much more subtle and much sort of almost pretty. And
on some of the, urban.
Yeah, very much so.
Less graffito.
Well, in some of the paintings, you can see that it looks like he's held up grasses and perhaps bits of branches and things and sprayed across them. So they're almost like a sort of ghostly, almost like a stencil. I think what's very interesting about this show, though, is, as I say, he's not massively well known. Although a work of his did sell for a surprisingly high price quite recently. I think it went for £1.3 million.
At auction.
At auction, which was a bit of a surprise to everybody.
So suddenly there's a big show on.
And suddenly there's a big show on. But very little in this show is for sale. And it seems to me that, I mean, I asked people at Gagosian why they were doing it, and they said, oh, because it seems the right thing. But it seems to me that they are obviously interested in creating a buzz around him. You know, Bacon, Freud, Auerbach, they're very, very expensive and there's not that much available. Although very little of this is available, and he was not a prolific artist, I should say. I believe he only made about 250 works, and there's about 60 in this show, mostly not for sale. But clearly there are some for sale somewhere.
Okay, well, it's interesting timing, and personally, I love this. I'd have one of those. I'd help them create a market.
I certainly.
They don't want people like me, do they?
I really like the sketches, actually. Well, I think some of them are certainly in the sort of 850 to a million mark. Yeah. So
there goes the house. Okay, that is Michael Andrews. It's called Earth, Air and Water. It's on at the Gagosian. You've got plenty of time for that one until March the 25th. We're going to scoot through Condo Complex, Jane. Talk us through this. Doing some research online, I see you've got some of the literature there in front of you. Have you looked at the website? Man Alive.
I have. I have to be honest, I found both the map and the website somewhat difficult to use. And I ended up writing out the names of the galleries and drawing my own little map that made a bit more sense to me and probably to everyone else
it's
also.
It's a sensory overload, and I suppose that's the point. But what is the idea behind this big sort of group show of all sorts of different stuff?
Well, I think what's very interesting here, we've just talked about Gagosian and White Cube, two of the Titanic London galleries. There are a couple of big galleries in this sort of group, but basically most of them are the smaller ones that most people don't know very much about. January can be a bit of a dead month in the art world. And what's happened here, it's been organised by somebody called Vanessa Carlos, who runs a very small gallery out at Stepney Green called Carlos Ishikawa. And last year she came up with the idea of suggesting that instead of showing your own shows, you invite galleries from abroad, mostly abroad, to come and show in your space. And it actually has created a bit of a buzz. And although this map is not terribly functional, basically, if you follow a sort of tour of these galleries, now I have to confess I haven't seen all of them. I froze my way around on a couple of days so far. But you're going to go on quite a sort of interesting journey.
Yeah.
So say, apart from Sadie Cole's, which is one of the really big galleries, you basically could start at, well, you start whichever way you like, but you're essentially going to do a tour that takes in quite a lot of East London and not just the sort of Shoreditch area. Vauxhall, Peckham, you know, some of these out of the way places. So it's quite a fun way to sort of see some of London's cooler, more edgy little galleries with some even cooler sort of German...
It's good stuff, isn't it? Sunday Painters is a good gallery. Always interesting, big, weird things that they often do and bring to art fairs particularly, don't they? What are they like when they're sharing digs with other people or they're giving up their digs for other people?
Well, I thought what was interesting is the very big galleries, which are the two of the bigger ones, which is Maureen Paley and Sadie Coles, have basically sort of given over a bit of their space, but otherwise have their main show on. I mean, a fantastic show at Sadie Coles called Rim, but I think it's about to finish. But most of them have actually given over the whole gallery and clearly have done a sort of collaboration. And actually one of the best, I thought, was in fact Carlos Ishikawa, which is, I say, it's a really, really small gallery. It took me quite a while to find it, I have to confess, and I live in the East End. I ended up on this very tiny, very odd industrial estate. And I thought, do you know what? I spent an awful lot of my career in places like this. I bet it is somewhere around here. And indeed it was. And they've got this huge installation in this little room by Oscar Murillo. Yeah. And it's these sort of Mexican workers sitting on sort of benches round the gallery, and then they have a couple of other artists in there. It's mostly young artists, mostly quite sort of edgy, quite experimental. It's good fun. It's really worth the tour. Pity it was so cold at the moment, but you know.
You can't blame the galleries for that, Jane.
We can't, but... and we have to be hardy. I mean, you know, sort of these kind of drafty studio spaces are kind of at the very core of the art world.
Exactly. I also like the idea, I like Oscar Murillo, after he's kind of gone massive, to be a difficult to find artist in Stepney Green as well.
Well, given
now.
We're used to seeing him at David's Werner,
precisely, yeah. So it's kind of nice to see him kind of coming back, not biting the hand that feeds him, but you know,
well, back to his roots.
That is Condo Complex, and that is continuing until the 11th of February. Look online if you dare at the strobing crazy website, or do what Jane did and copy it out and draw a map of your own devising. She's nodding in in agreement at that one.
It's definitely easier.
Okay. Well, Jane, thanks very much as ever for talking us through your highlights of the London art scene. We're going now to take things out of the studio and head to Lisbon, where an exhibition marks the 100th anniversary of the painter Amadeo de Sousa Cardoso's first show in Portugal. Just like in 1916, the exhibition arrived a couple of weeks ago to Lisbon after being on display in Porto, and celebrates a remarkable and controversial show that introduced one of the greatest Portuguese artists to the country's public. Amadeo would die 2 years later, and though he had shown his work around Europe and was known in the avant-garde movement, he was forgotten for decades and was only rediscovered some 30 years ago. To better understand his work and the impact of his original exhibition, Antonio Fernandes went to the Contemporary Art Museum de Chiado in Lisbon to meet with one of the curators, Marta Suarez. Here she starts by talking about how much Amadeo was involved in organising the exhibition back then.
This work as curator is important for us, in the sense that he did the catalogue of the exhibition, and from this catalogue, dated from 1916, we can understand the relationships that he builds between his own works. So as much as possible, we try to follow his guidelines in this centenary catalogue that Amadeo de Sousa Cardoso did, and he also introduced during the exhibition, promoted himself, and thanks to these interviews, we can now understand his point of view more clearly, and we can further grasp his work.
As you said, this was a controversial exhibition, and some stories from 1916 tell us how some visitors reportedly spit on paintings. Amadeo himself was punched on one occasion, so the public clearly didn't react that well to the exhibition. What may have generated those violent reactions?
This was the first exhibition of modern painting in Portugal, and there are a few aspects that can explain that scandal, and we clearly understand that while reading some articles of the exhibition in 1916. The titles were very long, and in Portuguese, French, with circles and graphic signs like hands pointing, and this was clearly an aspect that caused scandal. Then the colors were so lively that were also strange to the visitors.
And finally, I was going to ask you to choose one must-see painting, but I'm going to be a bit selfish here and ask if you could guide us through one of my favorites, A Vida dos Instrumentos, The Life of Instruments.
Yes, of course, and that is one of the most interesting and important paintings of this exhibition, and it can be important also for the work that Amadeu de Sousa Cardoso is producing in Portugal during the World War I, and the majority of the works he shows in 1916. Vida dos Instrumentos, The Life of Instruments, summarizes his will to give life to musical instruments. Contrary to his musicians, to portraits of musicians that we can see in this exhibition, Amadeu puts through a wide range of lively colors and a small detail in the musical instrument, in the guitar, that suggests a kind of eye. He anthropomorphizes the guitar and makes these works in between human and musical instrument and object. We can also see in the exhibition Farol Breton, that is also an object, but with a human silhouette. So in this exhibition, he is trying to cross human qualities, human features, with objects. And for me, it's one of the most interesting traits of Amadeu de Sousa Cardoso during this period.
And you can catch the work of Amadeu de Sousa in Lisbon until the 26th of February. And that brings us to the end of today's show. Thanks again to my guest, Jane Morris. You've been listening to the Monocle Arts Review with me, Robert Bounds. This show was produced by Holly Fisher. Join us again at the same time tomorrow for our music review. But for the time being, from me, Robert Bounds, thanks for tuning in.